Hello, I am Dr. Jessica Colburn, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Geriatric Medicine at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, and we will be discussing the key points from the GEDC curriculum's delirium module on evaluation of an older patient with delirium with Dr. Christina Shenvey, Assistant Professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of North Carolina. So Dr. Shenvey, thank you for joining me, and I wanted to just invite you to tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing us this opportunity to talk about delirium, which is such an important topic in older patients. So I am emergency medicine trained and did a fellowship in geriatric emergency medicine, and now I help run our geriatric operations here at UNC. And this presentation was put together along with Kanwal Awan. So let's dive in.
Great. Thank you so much. So to get us started, as we're thinking about evaluation of older adults who come into the emergency department, I'd love if you could talk us through the most common causes of delirium that we should be considering, in particular for older patients who come to the ED.
Absolutely. And before we jump into the common causes of delirium, I would recommend that any listener go and also listen to the section or look at the slides for the section on diagnosing delirium in the ED, because you have to think about it first and then diagnose it and then start thinking about the underlying causes. So some of the most common underlying causes are things like medications, complications or interactions, infections, neurologic, metabolic, cardiopulmonary, substance use or withdrawal, and then other medical causes such as urinary retention, constipation, uncontrolled pain, and then there are also environmental factors. And I'll go into some of these in a little bit more detail. But one other really important thing to be aware of in older patients is that delirium is not typically just due to one thing. It's usually multifactorial. For example, if you think about an older patient who comes in delirious, and we automatically think, oh, they must have a UTI, or at least we think a UTI may be a common cause of delirium. But when you have younger patients coming in who have UTIs, they don't become delirious. So the instigating reason may be the UTI, but the reason that the patient becomes delirious is because of many other physiologic changes that go on as we age in terms of how we can compensate for illness or injury, as well as a number of other factors. So it's important to remember that, first of all, it's almost always multifactorial. Second of all, even if you treat the underlying UTI, the delirium may lag behind the treatment of that underlying cause. So with that in mind, let's look in more detail at some of those common etiologies. First, medications. Some of the common things are sedatives, opioids, but also anticholinergic or antihistamine medications, as well as antispasmodics, so muscle relaxants, things like that, and even things like corticosteroids. And then another factor to think about is even if there aren't any of these specific medications on their list, polypharmacy itself, which means having four or more medications that they take regularly, just taking a lot of different medications can put them at risk. Infections is the next big category, and the most common ones being things like urinary tract infection, pneumonia, acute cholecystitis, appendicitis, meningitis certainly can do it. It's rarer. And then our third big category is neurologic. Things like a subdural hemorrhage, intracerebral hemorrhage, stroke, TIA, transient ischemic attack, or brain tumor. Those are our first big three: medications, infections, and neurologic disorders. Fourth is metabolic. And due to a number of different factors, older adults are more at risk for becoming dehydrated. This has to do with both their physiology and also a diminished thirst reflex. So dehydration is a common one we see, and that can either be compounded by or be the cause of things like hypo or hypernatremia. In addition, particularly in diabetic patients, things like hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia can cause delirium. And then acute kidney injuries with uremia. The next big category is cardiopulmonary disorders. Things like cardiac ischemia, dysrhythmia, dissection, COPD exacerbation or CHF exacerbation, these things can cause delirium. Next are things that are a little less common, substance use. We know that it occurs in our older patients, alcohol as well as other substances. It's less common than in the younger adult population, but it's important to keep in mind that patients could have alcohol, opioid, or benzodiazepine use or withdrawal symptoms. And then there's kind of a group category of other medical causes, things like urinary retention, fecal impaction, and uncontrolled pain. The final one is another bucket of different things, which is environmental factors. Things like lack of sleep, hearing or vision loss, or an unfamiliar environment, which when I think about patients coming in who may have some mild delirium and they come into the ED, and now they're in this very unfamiliar environment with a lot of different stimulation, a lot of different unusual things, and they may not have their hearing or vision aids. That, unfortunately, can potentially worsen delirium. So those are some of the big categories and big things to think about with delirium. And our first teaching point is that it's important to know and understand the common causes of delirium that we've mentioned, and also understand that it's multifactorial and that sometimes it can be hard to really parse out what is the underlying cause.
Great. Thank you so much. I think that's a really helpful framework for thinking about all the different things that can possibly cause delirium in an older adult, especially since, as you highlighted, it can be so many things or often several things at the same time in someone who's at higher risk due to other changes related to age or cognitive change, or things we see in many of our older adult patients. Given the number of different possibilities you might consider in a patient who presents to the emergency department, as you begin to evaluate an older adult in the ED who is delirious, what is the general approach that you use in your evaluation?
So first, as we mentioned, it's important to understand how to diagnose delirium, and I'll refer listeners to the other presentation on that. But then it's important when you're looking for the underlying causes to do a history and physical with that concept of delirium in mind. So it's good to obtain the history from the patient if possible, depending on their mental status. But it's also important to note that their time when you see them in the ED is just one snapshot in time. And one of the characteristics of delirium is that it is waxing and waning. So they may seem more coherent at this time, but if the family members are telling you, no, she was very confused, she didn't know what was going on 3 hours ago, then you should believe them and understand that this is a waxing and waning syndrome. It's very important to gather collateral history because by the nature of delirium, you may not be able to get an accurate history from the patient. And sometimes the patients will kind of fill in the gaps and try to make up the history, but by speaking with family members or caregivers, you can confirm which aspects are correct. So we would want to know from the family or caregivers, when was the onset of these symptoms? Have they been waxing and waning, or has this been a gradual progressive state? What is their baseline level of functioning? It's very important to know if a patient is coming in and they look like they're chronically bedbound, and they are chronically bedbound, then that's no change. But if they are normally highly functional and drive themselves and manage all their activities of daily living, then that's a very significant change that we need to be concerned about. We want to ask our usual history and physical questions like associated symptoms to look for the underlying causes, such as have they had fevers, vomiting, diarrhea, chest pain, any new exposures. Any recent falls, again, head trauma or head injury can cause delirium, so any recent falls. And then the big important one that often we have to obtain from caregivers or family members is their medication history. And I ask about any new medications, any changes in dosing to medications, and this can be really important to drill down on in a very practical way because sometimes maybe medications have been on a patient's list, but they haven't been taking it, and then all of a sudden they start taking it, and now they're having side effects, or maybe it's on their list, but they're actually not taking it. So obtaining a really accurate medication history is one of the most helpful things you can do for a patient. And then in thinking about medications, it's also useful to ask about over-the-counter or herbal medications. Patients or families may not think to report Tylenol or aspirin, but certainly overdose or a chronic unintentional overdose of those medications could lead to delirium, as well as any access to alcohol or any other medications or drugs that could be used unintentionally or intentionally abused.
That's really helpful, and I think helps highlight that though we think about our usual history taking whenever we're evaluating a patient who comes in with an acute or new onset concern, that it seems like highlighting some of the points as you did around the acute nature of it and the waxing and waning nature and some of the other really important changes that might guide us to one of the main buckets of categories you discussed in the first section. So I think that's really important. And it makes sense that as you move on to the physical exam and evaluating a patient, you, of course, would focus on the elements of the history that seemed the most essential. But in addition to that, what other key features are important to you when evaluating an older patient with delirium when you're doing the physical exam?
So I look very closely at the vitals. Of course, vitals are vital, but in older adults, they may have subtle changes that don't flag necessarily as tachycardia, but if their heart rate is in the 90s, to me that's not normal, particularly if they're on a beta blocker or some other medication that tends to slow the heart rates, then I would be concerned in my mind about a heart rate in the 90s, even though that's not technically tachycardic. Similarly, for blood pressure, if their blood pressure is under 120 and they have a history of hypertension, I'll start to think about, is this their normal blood pressure? Certainly if it's under 110, that is frequently an early flag to me that maybe this patient is dehydrated, or could it be early sepsis or some other cause of the slightly lower than expected blood pressure. Another component that can be helpful is doing orthostatic vitals. If there's any sense that there is some component of presyncope or orthostatic symptoms. And then, as you mentioned, the physical exam can be guided by the history and the concern, but often it has to be pretty thorough. And the reason is that by the nature of delirium, the patient or caregiver may not be able to tell you, oh, they have a sacral ulcer. So particularly if it's a patient who is not mobile, I will do a very thorough skin exam to evaluate for any decubitus or other dependent ulcers that could be causing pain or could have caused a nidus of infection. I'll also look for any signs of injury, particularly head traumas, so abrasions or hematomas. We have so many patients who are anticoagulated that even a small bump to the head can cause intracranial hemorrhage. So I'll look for those. I'll do a good skin exam to look for any signs of bruising or other injuries of trauma, including non-accidental trauma. And I'll come back to that one at the end, when we talk a little bit more about that. But then the rest is mostly doing a good, thorough physical exam as we would do for any other patient with our minds on infection, injury, and any other occult findings. I wanted to return briefly to that concern of any signs of abuse or neglect. In older adults, unfortunately, it can be harder to spot signs of abuse or neglect. And we know that it is underreported and underidentified. And some things that we can look for are, for example, abrasions or bruising on the upper arms that suggest that they have been grabbed, or any bruising or abrasions on the back, so places that you wouldn't normally bruise yourself if you are just walking around or if you fall, and any other patterns concerning, for example, rib fractures or multiple rib fractures that don't have a good explanation. And then signs of neglect could be, for example, poor care, poor dentition, poor hygiene, poor personal grooming, you know, toenails or fingernails that look like they haven't been groomed in a long time. And this is not necessarily because we want to then point blame at the caregiver or obviously the patient, but more to then look into it a little bit more deeply and say, what is this patient's support structure? Do they have a caregiver or are they living alone without care? And what are the needs that we can offer them, or do we need to have a case manager come and do an assessment? But that's something to think about in a patient who comes in with delirium, because we may be able to identify some underlying abuse or neglect.
That's a really helpful outline. Thank you. And I think it also highlights to me, as you're describing your physical exam, how much we can learn from the physical exam, even in a patient who might not be able to themselves give us clear details from the history due to delirium, but that the exam could still point you in a direction that could be really useful in your overall assessment.
Absolutely. So that brings us to our second teaching point, which is that a detailed history and physical form the foundation of the evaluation of delirium after getting, you know, including getting collateral for any older patient presenting to the emergency department.
And then I think after you collect the key portions of the history and the exam, the next step is, of course, putting together what diagnostic workup you might want to do for a patient in the emergency department. And in delirium, with so many different possible causes, I know it could be possible to order a large number of tests to evaluate for possible causes just to cover every possible base. But I know in many older adults, we want to try to avoid doing that because we can lead to unnecessary testing or potentially even additional harm inadvertently to our patients. So I wonder if you could talk us through how you approach testing and workup when evaluating a delirious patient.
Working in the ED, we like to think about what is the worst thing that could be happening. And we kind of have a worst first differential diagnosis going in our heads. So some of this you can almost see just from walking in the room, looking at the patient and looking at the vitals. But I like to think first about things that I can look for rapidly, fix rapidly, and that if I don't recognize and fix them, they could spiral and get worse rather quickly. So those are things like hypoxia, hypercarbia, hypoglycemia or hyperglycemia, and hyponatremia. Hyponatremia may be a little bit less so, but the first are things that I can get very quickly just with the vitals and with a point of care blood sugar. And if I'm concerned about the patient and they don't look well, I'll do a blood gas to also see their pH and their sodium and potassium levels quickly. But for patients who don't look immediately ill or like they're decompensating, I think it's very reasonable for most patients with delirium to get an EKG to look for dysrhythmias. We know that older patients don't present as classically with the, you know, substernal chest pain radiating to the left shoulder. They often present with what we call atypical symptoms, just because we've defined the typical as chest pain, but they present with other symptoms, and delirium could be a part of that. So I think it's very reasonable to get an EKG. I think it's very reasonable to get blood count, cell counts, and a metabolic panel in almost all patients. And this is to look for signs of leukocytosis or anemia in the cell count. And then with the basic metabolic panel for acute renal failure, dehydration, electrolyte abnormalities, particularly that hypo or hypernatremia, hypo or hyperkalemia or calcemia. So those are, I think, the things that we should do on almost all patients. There are certainly going to be some exceptions, but those are the very basics. The rest, I think, can be driven by your clinical concern and the other findings on the history and physical. And as ED physicians, we generally know what these things are, things like chest x-rays, blood gas, blood cultures, cardiac enzymes, et cetera, et cetera. And then additional imaging based on our history and physical, abdominal CT and ultrasound, CT head, if there's signs of head trauma, or they're at high risk for bleeds. And then things like a urine drug screen and blood alcohol level may be useful sometimes. And I think really when we have less of an idea of what it is, after our history and physical, if we really don't have much of a sense of what's going on, then it's reasonable to cast a broader net and start with some of those basic things. But then if nothing is turning up quickly, to maybe move on to things like a head CT or other tests to try to figure out what's going on when we don't have a clear picture. So our teaching point number three is workup should be directed by the history and physical exam, but casting a broad net when we don't have as much guidance from those.
I wonder, to help new team members in the emergency department or emergency department physicians who teach others in their role in the ED about how to work up delirium, what tools might you share that you find useful to help providers to remember the key features of a delirium workup?
Absolutely. And I think that this presentation hopefully will provide some guidance, but on shift, if you don't remember everything from this presentation and you want a quick recap for the delirious patient that you have in front of you, there's a fantastic tool that we put together with ASAP, and it's called the ADEPT tool. And it's available at asap.org/ADEPT. And this is a tool that can be used. It's free on the internet for when you're on shift and trying to think about how to assess and diagnose the patient. And the A stands for assess. And it talks about all the things that we talked about here in terms of doing a focused and guided H&P. D is diagnose, and that's covered in a different presentation. E is to evaluate, evaluating the underlying cause of delirium. And that goes through a lot of the labs and things we talked about here. And P is prevent, so how to prevent worsening of delirium or prevention of delirium in high-risk patients through various environmental changes or things like ensuring pain control, ensuring adequate hydration, et cetera, et cetera. And the T is treating the delirium. So in all cases, if we can, we want to treat the delirium by addressing the underlying causes, because again, delirium is a symptom or a constellation of symptoms from some other constellation of underlying causes. So we want to treat the delirium by addressing those underlying causes, as well as taking preventative steps in terms of the environmental factors, such as the noise, loss of vision or hearing aids, et cetera. And then sometimes if a patient has hyperactive delirium, which is less common, usually patients are hypoactive in the delirious state, but sometimes hyperactive patients can be at risk of harming themselves or others. So the treat portion of the ADEPT tool talks about which medications are safer. None are perfectly safe, but which are safer in the management of older patients who have hyperactive or agitated delirium. So that's our final teaching point, number four, that the ADEPT tool summarizes five steps for assessing and managing delirium. in the ED, we always need to assess the patient for immediate life threats and intervene on them, and then perform an HMP, really looking at what are the underlying causes of delirium, and then diagnosing it using some of our screening tools, and then looking at ways to either prevent its worsening as well as treat those underlying causes.
Dr. Shembe, thank you so much for talking us through this really helpful overview of how to evaluate an older adult in the ED with delirium. And just as we wrap up, what would you say are the main take-home points from this module?
First of all, delirium is common among older adults, and it has a number of causes and is often multifactorial. When delirium is present, clinicians should look for those underlying causes and use their HMP guided by the knowledge of the differential diagnosis for delirium that we've talked about, and do a thorough history, including medications and obtaining collateral information. The physical exam also should be thorough, in part because these patients often cannot provide a clear history and physical, and we should look for signs of occult infection or trauma, and then also incorporate an assessment of their cognition and level of alertness. The testing can be guided by the history and physical, but most patients will warrant some basic labs and an EKG, and then further testing can be guided based on what you find. But if you're really not sure what the delirium is from, it's reasonable to cast a broader net. And then finally, the ADEPT tool put out by ASAP is a great evidence-based guideline for the workup and management and prevention and treatment of delirium in the acute care setting. And I highly encourage you all to look at that, and you can make a shortcut to it on your phone to access on your next shift.
Great. Thank you so much for discussing the key points of this curriculum's delirium module. It's been great chatting with you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.